My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. It's something that we do thousands of times a day without thinking about it. We do it from seconds after birth until our final moment in life. It gets faster when we exercise and slower when we rest. We may hold this underwater and for certain medical tests. Extraordinary beauty has been said to take this away. The gift of life is our breath, and learning to use it mindfully can promote health, stress reduction, a deeper understanding of ourselves, and peace. My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Dr. Danny Penman, knows well the value of both breathing and mindfulness. Danny is a feature and comment writer for the UK's Daily Mail and has worked for The Independent and the BBC. He is co-author with Mark Williams of the international bestseller Mindfulness, and he joins me this evening to discuss his new, beautiful, and breathtaking book, The Art of Breathing, The Secret of Living Mindfully. Good evening, Danny Penman. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be on the program.
And thank you for joining us. Danny, you obviously took your first breath and immediately began breathing mindfully, correct? Please share with
us. Please share all with of our those years ago, yes.
Please share with our listeners your story and how you discovered mindfulness and mindful breathing.
Well, it's a rather painful story. I used to be a very, very keen paraglider pilot. And about 10 years ago, I was flying my paraglider over a range of hills in southern England called the Cotswolds. And suddenly, out of the blue, this most tremendous gust of wind hit me. And the canopy collapsed, and I fell head over heels into the to the hillside below. And luckily, I landed on my feet, but unluckily, the lower half of my right leg was driven through the knee and into my thigh.
Oh, my goodness.
It was a absolutely horrific injury, and I was lying there on the hillside, initially completely stunned, and I could not breathe. You know, the wind had literally been knocked out of me. And so I was lying there, really quite lucid, and wondering in all seriousness, you know, was this it? Was, you know, was had I essentially just moments to live? And I suddenly remembered a form of meditation that I had learned when I was about 16 or 17 years old in high school. And we'd been taught a very simple breathing meditation. And the idea was to kind of fortify us against anxiety and stress in later life. So we were taught this to, you know, so that we could use it in times of acute stress. And that's just what I did over the years. You know, from time to time, I would use this extremely simple breathing meditation. And, you know, I'd used it off and on, but never really used it in all great seriousness. I'd use it for a while and then stop because the stress would go away. And then I'd just pick up life and carry on and not use it for another 6 months or a year. And somewhere along the line, I had learned that meditation was quite useful for pain relief. And so I was there on this hillside, and I was hit by, as you can imagine, the most unimaginable pain. And I still couldn't breathe. So in absolute sheer desperation, I decided to try and use this breathing meditation. And obviously, there was a slight problem in that I could not breathe at this point. But I, you know, I tried, and I took the most glorious breath imaginable. It was almost like my first breath ever. And I breathed in, And I then used this meditation to control the pain and to try and keep things together whilst, you know, I called for an ambulance and just generally kept myself alive until the paramedics arrived. And they took me to hospital, and, you know, the full extent of my injury soon became apparent. And I had a series of three major operations, and I had what's known as a Taylor spatial frame attached to my leg. And this consisted of three big titanium rings around the outside of my leg and 16 wires and bolts that went through one side of my leg, through a fragment of bone and out the other side. And this device, which looked like a medieval torture device, allowed the surgeons to move the fragments of bone around inside my leg so that they could kind of heal properly. And I was told that this would take, that they'd have, this device would have to be on my leg for about 20 to 24 months or thereabouts. And as you can imagine, this was extremely painful. And I was under immense anxiety and stress and not a little unhappiness. So I began to use this breathing meditation more and more just to help me kind of keep control of my life, my day-to-day life, because, you know, there's a very, very long road ahead of me. And much to my surprise, and this was genuine surprise, I found that this meditation was really helping me to, you know, reduce anxiety and stress and unhappiness. And each day I would do it for maybe 10 or 15 minutes, a couple of times a day. And it allowed me to do all of the physiotherapy, because I had to do 3 hours of physiotherapy a day. It was a really tough time. And my rate of healing began to really accelerate, so much so that I had the Taylor spatial frame removed from my leg after, I think it was 17 or 18 weeks. So I made a very, very swift recovery. Now, I obviously had an awful lot of time on my hands, you know, during the my whole period of convalescence. And I began to become increasingly fascinated by this meditation and all of the ideas that surrounded it. I eventually learned that the meditation I'd been using was actually known as mindfulness meditation. And I tracked down a man at Oxford University in the UK that actually turned mindfulness into a therapy for the worst forms of depression. And this technique was known as mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. And it had been, you know, it proved to be so successful that it had recently been recommended by the UK's National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, which this approves the treatments in the UK's National Health Service. It kind of evaluates things, you know, just to see how effective they actually are. And the more I learned about mindfulness, the more and more fascinated I became. I eventually tracked down Mark Williams, Professor Mark Williams at Oxford, and we decided that, you know, that the world really needed to know about this technique. And I did my absolute level best to get this into kind of the national media in the UK. And bearing in mind this was 10 years ago, absolutely nobody was interested in this technique then. People would always have the same response. They go, mindlessness. What on earth is mindlessness? How is that going to help people cope with kind of stress and depression? Eventually, I managed to convince one UK newspaper to run a really small article about it. And, you know, predictably, that sank like a stone. It was just written off as some kind of bizarre Buddhist thing that nobody really would take any attention of. And in sheer desperation, really. I worked with Mark, decided to work with Mark to produce a book that took his work and turned it into a book that ordinary people could just kind of pick up and use in daily life. So it took the 8-week mindfulness-based cognitive therapy course and essentially cut the time period that was needed to do it from 45 minutes a day over 8 weeks to 10 or 20 minutes a day over 8 weeks. And that was published, 7 years ago now. And it became known as Mindfulness, an 8-week plan for finding peace in a frantic world. And it suddenly became a worldwide bestseller. It's sold over 1 million copies now. And, you know, it's widely used across the UK's National Health Service. It's being used. It's sold huge numbers in America, too. And is being used increasingly for such diverse things as, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety, stress, depression. You know, if it's got any relationship to stress at all, people are using our book to, you know, help them cope with the, you know, with their illnesses.
That's a fascinating story. You have a little bit of time left in this first segment, but I have to ask you, how old were you at the time that you had the accident?
Good question. I think I was about 40. I must have been 40, 39, 40.
So you're 40 years old and you had a back. Well, I'm going to save this question for the next segment, but that's truly a remarkable story. My guest this evening is Dr. Danny Penman. He's the author of The Art of Breathing, The Secret to Living Mindfully. And we'll be back with more of Danny after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Aliyah, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Sylvia Henderson, intuitive life coach and energy healer. Are you ready to elevate and rise way above your normal? Be sure to listen to my show, Intuitive Transformations, on OM Times Radio, Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. Get the inspiration you need to transform your life.
Okay, man, this is your time. Maybe you didn't choose this, but you're here now. You're going to go out there and be an all-star caregiver. Cook, clean, be there emotionally and physically. You got to dig deeper. Drive them to physical therapy, doctor's appointments, because that's what caregivers do. Don't give up. Show the world that you're tougher than tough. Caregiving is tougher than tough. Find the care guides you need at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening, Danny Penman. He's the author of The Art of Breathing, The Secret to Living Mindfully. So, Danny, in the last segment, you shared your story about how at age 40, you were doing some paragliding, crashed, really destroyed one of your legs, had to go through this torture surgery, but you had used mindfulness while you were waiting for the first responders to come to you and to attend to you, that you had learned when you were in early grade school when you were 16 years old. You got your degree, your PhD is in biochemistry, you're a doctor of biochemistry. In your mind, could you somehow rationalize how you were able to use this technique, not only to get through the pain of the initial trauma, but also to heal faster?
Well, I used it in desperation. If somebody had come along and said, I'll wave this crystal over your leg and it will heal. I would have said, go ahead, wave that crystal. I would have tried anything at all, you know. I mean, I did, as I said, an awful lot of this meditation out of sheer desperation. I really cleaned up my diet a lot. I became virtually vegan because I'd heard that a lot of cheese and dairy products can impair bone healing, for example. You know, I did everything the doctors and physiotherapists and surgeons told me to. I didn't care how much pain it would cause. I just wanted to do my absolute level best to get better. And you know, that was my focus. I would do anything they told me, and I would try anything anybody else suggested to try and get better.
So you don't see alternative healing as mutually exclusive from traditional Western medicine?
No. I mean, well, it depends on the what's being offered, really. But I think, you know, if you were in a desperate situation like I was, give it a go. I'd always be quite suspicious if somebody was trying to charge you a lot of money for it. But in terms of, I'd give it a go. I mean, having said that, a neighbor of mine at the time was a trained acupuncturist. And you know, there's a lot of evidence that acupuncture works, but I'd had so many needles shoved in me over the previous few months that the last thing I wanted was to try acupuncture.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Now, mindfulness is a word that stems from the Pali word sati, which means awareness, or sometimes people say enlightenment. How do you define mindfulness?
It is simply full conscious awareness of whatever is going on in your mind and body and around you in the present moment. You know, it is paying full conscious attention to all of the sights and smells around you, the thoughts and feelings flowing through your mind and body. So it is being present in the present moment. That's what it is, really. You know, there's nothing magical or mystical about it. And, you know, traditionally, mindfulness has been cultivated through very simple breathing meditations. You know, breathing meditations are the foundation stone of mindfulness, and they are tremendously powerful.
Absolutely. How does mindfulness or does mindfulness meditation differ from other forms such as transcendental meditation?
I'm not sure about transcendental meditation. My understanding is that there is a mantra that is repeated over and over again. Now, I suspect that it probably works in a similar way, you know, at a fundamental level, as in you're just saying a mantra over and over again focuses you to focus on the rise and fall of the sound of the word and the pitch and the timbre of the word. So I suspect they probably all have very similar basis. But there are plenty of other forms of meditation as well, which are related to mindfulness. I mean, you get visualization meditations that, encourage you to, cultivate certain states of mind. A classic one is known as metta. That's M-E-T-T-A. In the West, it's called loving kindness meditation. And what this encourages you to do is to cultivate feelings of warmth and love and kindness to other people and to yourself. And that has very powerful effects as well. And there are, you know, other forms of mindfulness or other techniques that you use within mindfulness, such as a body scan meditation, where you progressively scan through your body to pay attention to all of the feelings and the physical sensations as they flow through different parts of your body. A lot of them have very common roots, I think.
What's your take on guided and group meditation?
Guided meditations are obviously, it's a very good way of, especially if you're a beginner, actually going through the process and of learning these techniques. And they can be very powerful. I mean, I think that, you know, even if you are an experienced meditator, it's quite useful to do guided meditations from time to time, just because, you know, even experienced meditators can become a little stale from time to time. So, you know, it's good to refresh your ability.
What do you say to people who say, I can't meditate?
Everybody can meditate. And in fact, the people who say they can't meditate can actually end up gaining the most benefit from it and will actually do it surprisingly easily. Because the one thing people always kick themselves over when they try mindfulness in particular is they say, my mind always wanders away from my breath or from my body or whatever. And actually, the moment they realize their mind has wandered away from the breath is a moment of mindfulness. It is that moment of realization that is the heart of mindfulness, because all of a sudden you're in the present moment and you realize what is going through your mind and your body. So that actually is you know, extremely important.
So even awareness of the fact that their mind has wandered is mindfulness.
Absolutely. I mean, that is the core skill of mindfulness, is realizing when your mind has wandered away with itself.
Many people who have never practiced meditation of any form have this visualization or the sense of images of people sitting in an ashram and chanting or burning incense or having candles or various types of special settings. You say in your book, The Art of Breathing, you don't need any of that stuff.
No, you don't at all. You don't need any cushions or fancy chairs or anything at all. In fact, all you need is your body, your mind, your breath, perhaps a chair, and that's it.
What about sitting in the lotus position?
No, that's extremely uncomfortable. That's just the way people used to sit in the East. You know, that's just the way they used to sit. We invented the chair in the West. So sit on a chair.
I love that. The best meditation tool is your little chair that you have that you can sit
absolutely.
On.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What about posture while sitting?
The best posture is to sit with your back in a nice kind of comfortable but relaxed, erect posture, about an inch or two from the back of the chair. You know, progressively relax your shoulders, have your feet flat on the floor, close your eyes, and then begin focusing on the breath as the air flows in and out of your body.
We have a couple of minutes left in this segment. Can you give us share with us a brief example of a mindfulness meditation?
Yeah, I can.
I just have to caution our listeners that if you're driving a car or operating equipment at this time or cooking, please stop or turn your device off so you're not lulled away from what you're focusing on.
Absolutely, yes. Don't do anything dangerous.
There you go.
Okay, well, let's. I'll go through the basic technique. It'll take maybe a minute or so. I mean, it's best to do it if you can for 10 minutes, but I'll just share the basic technique with you right now. Okay, so sit on a chair. A nice straight-backed chair is ideal. Have your feet flat on the floor and your back about an inch or two from the back of the chair, and place your hands in your lap in a nice relaxed position. Have your back nice and relaxed but erect, and gently close your eyes and then begin to focus on the breath as it flows in and out of your body. Pay attention to wherever the sensations are the strongest. And feel the air as it flows in and out. The way your chest rises and falls. So in and out. Sooner or later, you'll realize that your mind has wandered away from the breath. This is entirely normal. Minds wander. It's what they do. So when you realize your mind has wandered, gently escort your awareness back to the breath and pay attention as the air flows in and out. And just carry on paying attention to the breath for as long as you feel able, ideally for 10 or 12 minutes, maybe longer. And then gradually begin to expand your awareness, to take in your surroundings, the sights and sounds that surround you. Just gradually broaden your awareness so that you become fully aware of whatever's going on around you. And open your eyes and begin to reconnect with the world around you. And that really is a simplest meditation you can ever do. That's very simple breathing meditation. And that's
Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Danny. I know that our listeners are very relaxed right now. My guest is Danny Penman. He's the author of The Art of Breathing, The Secret to Living Mindfully. Danny, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about your work.
The best place is to go to my website, franticworld.com, and you'll find not only links to buy the book, but as much information as you will hopefully ever need about mindfulness. It's got all of the scientifically validated research. It just explains everything you need. And there's plenty of meditations you can download for free as well. So, you know, have a look around and download what you want.
And we'll be back with more of Danny Penman and The Art of Breathing after these words from the OM Times Radio Network.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Looking for uncommon talent? Meet the grads of life. They're not the typical candidates you're used to, but they're exactly who your company needs. An ideal fit for entry-level positions, internships, and even mentorships. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn more. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Keyboard Cat, Hamilton the Pug, and Toast Meets World. These are some of the internet's most beloved pets. And they all have one thing in common. Their stories started in a shelter. Start your story. Adopt a dog or cat today. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Training that pet to play the keyboard, that's optional. Start a story. Adopt a shelter or rescue pet today. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening, Danny Penman. He's the author of The Art of Breathing, The Secret to Living Mindfully. So, Danny, we breathe in and out thousands of times a day, not even thinking about it. Yet it keeps us in that sense of life. And using mindfulness, we can find peace and tranquility and healing through breathing. Talk about that, please.
Yeah, we breathe 22,000 times a day, and virtually nobody is aware of more than one or two breaths a day, if that many. You know, it is so ordinary, so mundane, but it is so central to our lives. And, you know, there's countless Research papers now have shown that simply doing the simplest meditations that focus on the breath can dramatically reduce anxiety, stress, and depression. You know, it's almost instant relief for stress, for example, if you just close your eyes and just focus on the safe sensations the breath makes as the air flows in and out of your body. And, you know, if you reduce stress, you know, it's not just a nice, pleasant thing to happen to you. It, you know, kickstarts the immune system, enhances healing. You know, it reduces anxiety and depression. And one meditation program in particular, known as mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, has been shown to be at least as good as drugs or counseling for treating the worst forms of depression. And in fact, some of the worst forms of depression, which involve childhood abuse, it is far better than drugs. So it is a tremendously powerful technique.
You know, there are many studies now that show the effectiveness on mindfulness and mindfulness meditation on healing issues such as trauma and depression and anxiety. Yeah. How do they use that? How is it used as a tool?
The most commonly used technique is, certainly in the UK and increasingly across the US, is the technique known as mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. And this is an 8-week program where people attend a course and they will go to a class that is maybe an hour or two long each week. And people are gradually, they're introduced to a series of meditations, such as a body scan meditation, certain breathing meditations. But they also learn how the mind works and how it tricks us into essentially enhancing anxiety, stress, and depression. Because what happens with depression in particular is if you have a single negative thought, it will tend to trigger other similar negative thoughts. So even though you might not be aware of the first or second negative thought, what tends to happen is you get this kind of cascade effect whereby, you know, you can start the day perfectly happy, but you get this kind of whole series of negative thoughts that are just building up in the background, and you start to feel unhappy. And this can build up through the day and through the weeks and perhaps the months. And, you know, that is one of the origins of depression. And what tends to happen is all trains of thought in the mind, after a while, they begin to wear grooves. So it becomes easier to trigger negative thoughts, negative cascades. And that really is one of the major problems with depression, is that depression becomes increasingly easy to trigger. It becomes deeper each time it happens. So that I think the figures are, you know, if you have one depression, you've got a 50% chance of it returning. If you have three or more major depressions, there is an 80% chance of it returning. And what MBCT does is it breaks that cycle. It teaches you how the mind works. It teaches you to spot these negative thought spirals at very early stages so that you can kind of take constructive action to head them off. So that gradually you learn kind of useful techniques for living, really. And what people have found is that if you do the 8-week course and never actually practice mindfulness again, your chances of getting a second major depression are actually about the same as if you have taking a maintenance dose of antidepressants. It's that powerful. And most people also believe that if you continue to meditate, you know, maybe only for 10 or 20 minutes a day using very simple breathing meditations, you will actually ward off, or you stand a very good chance of warding off future depressions. This is a very simple and a tremendously powerful technique, and everybody should be taught it. You know, people should be taught it in schools. I mean, there are pilot programs in the UK at the moment involving several thousand school pupils, students, and you know, that where these are being taught. And the idea is to actually roll it out through our education system. And there was a major clinical trial that concluded a few months ago at Cambridge University in the UK, one of the best universities in the world. And they found that the techniques in our book, Mindfulness, Finding Peace in the Frantic World, were astonishingly effective. I mean, this is a major clinical study. And they found that when it was taught to undergraduate students, that's, you know, 18 to 21 year olds, it was, you know, on a par with taking antidepressants.
Without generalizing or knocking the psychiatric medical industry here in the United States, the tendency is write the prescription. How do we change the mindset of the medical profession to start employing techniques like this?
Well, I think that, you know, the evidence is accumulating that mindfulness is or should become one of the mainstay treatments. And it really is just, it's just the weight of evidence is building, and they will switch over. I mean, I would never actually criticize the use of drugs, because they, you know, they have a role. And certainly if somebody is acutely depressed, you know, there's no way they should suddenly stop taking their medications. And, you know, it may be that medication is the most appropriate treatment for them at that moment. So I think it's important that, you know, people realize that mindfulness is tremendously powerful, but it is one of a number of tools. And you really have to be guided by your doctor or your therapist as to which is the most appropriate technique or the most appropriate treatment.
I'm personally a very strong advocate of never instead of, always in addition to, so that the combination of whatever therapies are employed, but they should absolutely include the technique of mindfulness breathing and the cognitive therapy. I think that's something so important as an adjunct to the traditional pharmacopoeia that's provided.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, the great thing about mindfulness and mindfulness-based cognitive therapy is that, you know, it is generally taught when people are taking their medications, so that they learn these techniques and then gradually they're weaned off their medication, so that they then have the tools necessary for kind of having a happy and fulfilling life.
Absolutely. How about mindfulness being used for addiction recovery?
I think it works quite well. I mean, it's something I keep meaning to look into, but my understanding it is there's a guy up in, I can't remember which university, but it's in the northeastern one of the northeastern states. It might be Massachusetts. Judson Brewer is his name, and he's done tremendous work in this area, and he's found it to be highly effective.
Absolutely. You know, let's talk a little bit about the actual breathing. Is mindfulness breathing similar to yogic breathing or pranayama?
I mean, all these techniques are really quite similar. I mean, yoga is essentially a moving meditation. That's what originally it was devised for. And, you know, it's tremendously effective. And so in a way, maybe mindfulness is static yoga.
And the actual act of mindful breathing, give us an example of the breath pattern that you use in mindfulness breathing.
Well, the simplest thing is to let the breath flow in whatever way it wants and just pay attention to it, because mindfulness is really just paying attention to the present moment. So if you're breathing, if, for example, you're under stress and you're breathing fast and shallowly, maybe just take one conscious deep breath where you're fully in control of it, so in and out. And then gradually allow it to assume its natural flowing rhythm. And as soon as you do that, it will naturally settle down into, you know, this kind of calm, free flowing breathing. And that will in turn trigger the whole parasympathetic nervous system, which is the soothing aspect of the nervous system. And when that's stimulated, your breath will naturally become deeper and slower. And in turn, that will encourage, you know, more free-flowing breathing. So you get into this wonderful positive cycle of, you know, where you become calmer and your breath becomes calmer, and then you become a little more calm. And eventually you end up in this supremely, calm, focused state of mind.
In The Art of Breathing, you talk about employing the 5-7 breathing technique. Please share that with our listeners.
Yeah, this is where you breathe in to the count of five. So again, maybe close your eyes and focus on, slowly count five on the way in and seven on the way out. And that's really to kind of consciously slow down the breath for a while. And then afterwards, you allow it to kind of assume its natural rhythm.
And why breathe out for seven counts a little bit longer than the intake of five counts?
It's just more effective for stimulating the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the calming aspect of the nervous system. So the idea is to kind of kickstart a positive cycle. And, if you do that for three or four breaths, even one breath, but, ideally three or four breaths, you will naturally begin to calm. And, everything follows from that.
It's interesting. When I was a child, and if I got upset about something, my mother would always say, count to 10. And this, in essence, is a very mindful way of counting to 10, isn't it?
Absolutely. It just puts a thin sliver of, it's almost like a bit of tobacco paper between you and your frantic thoughts. And if you do that, you begin to just have greater control over your life.
My guest is Danny Penman. He's the author of The Art of Breathing, The Secret to Living Mindfully. And we'll be back with more of Danny after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
My savings are gone.
Okay, where were they last?
Here, right before I spent them on that vacation to Aruba.
Weird. Not weird. Not saving now means no money later. For free ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
This is Terry Van Horn, and I want to invite you to join me for my weekly radio show, Healing Light, on OM Times Radio, every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Healing Light, we want to bring love, light, and blessings into your world. You can find out more about us at www.healinglightonline.com. Blessings.
Hello, it's me, the designer jeans in the back of your closet. What happened to us? I used to summer in the Hamptons, and now I'm stuck behind a pair of sweats. Okay, maybe I never really fit you right, but I got a lot more Sunday fun days left in me. So take me to Goodwill, where I can really make a difference.
Your donations to Goodwill create jobs, training programs, and education assistance for people in your community. To find your nearest donation center, go to goodwill.org. Donate stuff. Create jobs. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening, Danny Penman, is the author of The Art of Breathing, The Secret to Living Mindfully. Danny, what's the opposite of mindfulness?
Mindfulness, or even as in, your mind is just full of chaotic thoughts. So it's mindfulness with a double L, or mindlessness, perhaps.
I think mindlessness, yes.
is probably a better better. I mean, it's very easy to have the opposite state of mind, really, to true mindfulness. You know, we are all constantly bombarded with emails, text messages, Twitter messages, Facebook. You know, we're just never given a moment to be ourselves, really.
Do you see the digital revolution as contrary to human nature and development?
Well, it's kind of an extension of human nature, isn't it? We're all kind of incredibly curious, inquisitive creatures. So, you know, it's the culmination of technology in a way. I have this love-hate relationship with technology because basically I love it. You know, I love messing around with computers and phones and all the rest of it. But I'm very, very aware that it's really quite addictive. And, you know, it can monopolize your time like nothing else. And what I've started to do, and this is a really difficult thing to do, but what I've started to do is come 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening and at weekends, I actually switch off the data connection on my phone so that I still, you know, my wife can still reach me if she needs to, you know, catch me somehow. But it stops that knee-jerk reaction where I have to check, you know, news headlines or whatever, because that's the real killer. That's what draws you in, isn't it? You think, what's happening in the world today, you know, and what's happened in the last 30 seconds, and you check your phone, and before you know it, you spend 10 minutes, 20 minutes.
What you need to do is develop, and perhaps someone has already done this, but what you need to do is develop a mindful breathing app that twice a day is on your phone. And if you don't participate, your phone gets shut off.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's the way to do it, isn't it?
sort of a lovely thing by control, by force.
Yeah, I think it's the only way to go. I mean, you have to force yourself to be unavailable, or force your device to be unavailable in a way.
You use the C word, curiosity, and in The Art of Breathing, you talk about curiosity as the cure for negativity. Please explain.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's essentially, it is impossible to be curious and unhappy at the same time. So if you cultivate curiosity, you know, you just become consumed by, you know, pursuing an idea or whatever you're looking at or engaging with. There's just no space for negative thinking. And, you know, I'll often do it. You know, if I'm feeling a little bit unhappy, I will just go outside and I will pay attention to, you know, the leaves on the trees or the landscape in the park, or just go for a walk through the city and just pay conscious attention to whatever is going on around me. And you just don't have space to be unhappy. Something will catch your attention. You know, it is by far the best way of breaking a negative thought cycle.
You have a lovely example of an exercise of curiosity in your book. Share briefly with our listeners what it's about.
Well, this is where you go outside and, for example, go to the park and gather up 5 objects that you find. You know, it might be a leaf on a tree, or perhaps, you know, a packet from a candy bar or whatever. And mindfully examine them. You know, just see where the object was made. For example, if it was a packet of chips, for example, you know, look at the ingredients, see where it was made. Imagine how the potato was grown that went into that packet of chips. The farmers that grew it. You know, maybe the truck driver who drove the potatoes to the factory that made the chips, the people who fried the chips, the machines that put it into the packets, and the whole supply chain that got it into the store where this person bought it. And then maybe that person ate them, perhaps threw the packet away, or perhaps it just got blew away by the wind. And that sounds, when you're sitting in a studio or perhaps wherever you're listening to this program, it might sound a little bit silly, but you try it. It's actually a very interesting thing to do. And not only does it break negative thought cycles, it really sparks curiosity. It sounds a bit silly, but sparking curiosity is a tremendously important thing to do.
It's interesting how I actually taught myself technology by taking a computer apart and looking at each part.
Yeah.
And trying to understand what each part did and how it all went together.
Yeah.
And I think if people do something like, I don't advocate taking your computer apart, obviously, but anything that you have in your home, just take it and start studying, examining it. Think about how it was made, the people who originally manufactured it. I often, when I'm eating something, I'll think about the people who prepared the food and how they harvested the ingredients that went into the food. And for me, that helped me lose weight, mindful eating. Actually,
yeah. Well, it's easy. I mean, when you are curious, it's like reconnecting with your inner being, because we are by nature curious creatures, and we are. If we shut off our curiosity, I think we shut off our humanity.
I agree with you 100%. I think if we're not curious by nature, then what is life for? Why are we here if we're not curious by nature to learn something, to grow?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this is why I love, I call it the scavenger meditation in my book, because that's kind of what it is.
Go out on the scavenger hunt and then start looking at everything.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, I'll do it with my two kids, gathering leaves or flowers or whatever, and just thinking about where it came from.
I think what you just said is very important, and I think this is something that especially people who have young children should be aware of. How important is it to teach children this practice?
I think it's hugely important, but in a way, they already know it. The important thing is to make sure they don't forget it. And, I look at my two kids. I've got a 2-year-old son and a 6-year-old daughter, and they are naturally intensely curious. And something happens when kids, turn into teenagers and then into adults. Something happens. Their natural curiosity is blunted. And I'm going to do my damnedest to make sure that my kids' curiosity isn't blunted. And, I will be teaching them. I'm already teaching them, the basics of meditation. Not so that they would understand it as such, as meditation, but just, if I see that maybe they're getting a bit worried about something, to just focus on their breathing for a few moments. So they naturally soak up these skills.
Does one have to have a spiritual mindset to learn and practice this, or does spirituality not have to be present, or does it enhance spirituality to adapt these practices?
I don't think you need to be spiritually inclined at all to meditate. I mean, obviously, mindfulness came from the Buddhist tradition. But, it is similar techniques are found across all religions, and atheists are perfectly happy meditating because, it's a mental technique. Sure, it comes from Buddhism. They kept it alive for 2,500 years, but it's a basic human faculty,
Absolutely. Most people have their heads in the past and worry about the future. Mindfulness helps people stay in the present moment. Why is it so important that we learn to be present in our lives?
Because that's the only life you have, is the present moment. You can sit there worrying about the past or fretting about the future, but that's all vapor, really. The only thing that really matters is the present moment. Sure, it's important to plan for the future, and it's nice to remember pleasant thoughts from the past, but the most important moment, the only moment you ever really have, is the present moment.
I was one of these people before I got into the path that I'm on now, who used to catastrophize whatever the situation that I was going into. I always made it more difficult or projected it to be more difficult than it actually was. And when I found out and I came on the other side, it was actually very easy. Why do we have a tendency to do that?
Firstly, I think it's just the way the human mind works. And secondly, I think it's the way the modern world works, it's the human mind is a fantastic machine for taking the present moment and extrapolating into the future. And the state of mind that we are currently experiencing influences the direction of travel that our thought processes take. So if you're worried, you will naturally conjure up thoughts or have thoughts that enhance worry. If you are depressed, you will conjure up thoughts that enhance depression. If you're happy, you will have thoughts that conjure up positive thoughts. So that's just the way the mind works.
In the words of the song by Donovan, happiness runs in a circular motion, and that's what we should all be. What would you like readers to take away from the art of breathing?
The very simplest technique of all is just focusing on the breath. You know, it's the oldest meditation. It's the most powerful meditation. And it's probably the only meditation you will ever need.
Thank you very much. My guest, Danny Penman, is the author of The Art of Breathing, The Secret to Living Mindfully. Danny, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your work.
It's www.franticworld.com. That's franticworld.com.
And that should really make us an unfrantic world. You'll have to change the URL when everyone reads your book, right?
I hope so. That's certainly the aim. And they've got, that website is stuffed full of free meditations that people can just download and use whichever way they want.
Danny, thank you for sharing this very practical and very, very wise method that you have so come to love and develop in your own life, that changed your life and that can change the lives of so many. And thank you so much for joining us this week.
That's great. Thanks for having me on the program.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor, the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.